Chapter 12. Now after these agreements were made, Lucius returned to the king, while the Judeans went about their farming. But some of the local generals, Timotheos and Apollonios, son of Gnaeus, but also Hieronymus and Demophon, to say nothing of Nicanor, the chief of the Cuprians, would not allow them to live quietly and in peace. Now some Yathians committed this impious deed. They invited the Judeans who lived among them, together with their women and children, to embark on boats which they had provided. There was no hint of enmity toward them. But this was done by the common vote of the city. And when the Judeans, not expecting treachery and wishing to live on friendly terms, accepted the invitation, the Yathians took them out to sea. And drowned no less than 200 of them. Now, as soon as Judah heard of the cruelty perpetrated against the men of his nation, he transmitted a message to his men. And after calling upon God, the righteous judge, he marched against those who were stained with the blood of his kinsmen. And indeed, in a night attack, he set the harbor on fire and incinerated the boats, but stabbed those who had taken refuge there. But when the gates of that place were shut, he withdrew, intending to come back later and wipe out the entire population of Yafo. But he also heard that the men of Yabna planned to give like treatment to the Judeans who lived among them. So he attacked the Yabneans by night, setting fire to the harbor and the fleet from underneath, so that the glow of the light was visible as far as Jerusalem, 140 stadia away. Now when the Judeans had gone 9 stadia from there on their march against Timotheos, they were attacked by Arabians numbering no less than 5,000 infantry and 500 cavalry. But after a hard fight, Judah's party, with God's help, was victorious. The defeated nomads begged Judah to give him his right hand in pledge, and promised to supply the Judeans with cattle and to help them in every other way. Now realizing that they could really be useful in many respects, Judah agreed to make peace with them. After he had given them his right hand in pledge, the Arabians departed to their tents. Now he also attacked a certain city, which was made with strong dikes and surrounded by walls, and inhabited by mixed nations. Now its name was Kisphine. But those within the city, confident in the strength of their walls and their supply of food, treated Judah's party with contempt, insulting them and even reviling them and saying improper things. But Judah's party invoked the aid of the great ruler of the world, who, in the day of Yahshua, overthrew Jericho without battering rams or instrumental machines. Then, they fiercely stormed the ramparts. Now capturing the city by the will of God, they inflicted such indescribable slaughter upon it that the adjacent pool, which was 2 stadia wide, appeared to have been filled with irrigated blood. Now when they had marched 750 stadia, they reached Carica, where there were certain Judeans who are called Tobians. And indeed, they did not find the local commander Timotheos, for he had already departed from the region, failing to do anything but to leave behind in one place a very strong garrison. But Dositheos and Sosipatros, 2 of the Maccabees' commanders, marched out, destroying the force of more than 10,000 men whom Timotheos had left in the stronghold. Now the Maccabee divided his army into cohorts, with a commander over each cohort, and went in pursuit of Timotheos, who had a force of 120,000 infantry and 2,500 cavalry. But when Timotheos learned about Judah's approach, he sent the women and the children on ahead of him, as well as the baggage, to a place called Carnaim. For that place was difficult to besiege, and even difficult to access, because of the narrow terrain of that entire region. But when Judah's first cohort appeared, their enemies were overwhelmed with anxiety and fear at the manifestation of the All-Seeing One, scattering in every direction. They rushed away in such headlong flight that in many cases they injured their own men and were pierced by the points of their own short swords. Now Judah pressed the pursuit vigorously, putting the offenders to the sword, but utterly destroying as many as 30,000 men. But Timotheos himself fell into the hands of the party of Dositheos and Sosipatros. With great cunning, he asked them to spare his life. They let him go, because he indeed had in his power the parents and brothers of many of them, whom he could make suffer. Now when he had fully confirmed his solemn pledge to restore them unharmed, they let him go for the sake of bringing salvation to their brothers. Now Judah marched to Carnaim and the temple of Atarapha, where he slaughtered 25,000 bodies. Now after the defeat and destruction of these, he moved his army to Ephron, a strong city inhabited by Lucios and mingled multitudes. Now robust young men took up their posts in defense of the walls, from which they fought desperately. But inside were large supplies of weapons and missiles. But the Judeans, invoking the ruler who forcibly shatters the might of his enemies, took the city into their hands, but laid low 25,000 of its inhabitants. Now setting out from there, they hastened on to the city of the Scythians, which is 600 stadia from Jerusalem. But when the Judeans who lived there testified to the goodwill shown by the Scuthopolitans, and to their kind treatment even in times of misfortune, Judah's party thanked them and exhorted them to be well disposed to their race in the future also. Finally, they arrived in Jerusalem shortly before the Festival of Weeks. But after the festival called the 50th, they lost no time in marching against Gorgias, general of Edom. Now he opposed them with 3,000 infantry and 400 cavalry. But when they met in battle, it happened that a few of the Judeans fell. Now a certain Dositheos, a powerful horseback rider and one of the Tobians, caught hold of Gorgias, and grasping his military cloak, he dragged him along by brute force and intended to capture the vile wretch alive. But a Thracian horseman attacked Dositheos and cut off his arm. So Gorgias fled to Marishah. Now, after Ezri's party had been fighting for a long time and were weary, Judah called upon the Lord to manifest himself as their ally and leader in the battle. Raising a battle cry in the language of his fathers with hymns, he charged Gorgias' party when they were not expecting it, putting them to flight. Now Judah rallied his army and went to the city of Adullam. But as the week was ending, they purified themselves according to custom and kept the Sabbath there. Now on the following day, since the task had now become urgent, Judah's party went to pick up the corpses of those who had fallen and buried them with their kinsmen in the tombs of their fatherland. But under the tunic of each of the dead, they found amulets sacred to the idols of Yabna, which the law forbids the Judeans to wear. Now it was clear to everyone that this was why these men had fallen. Therefore, all of them praised the ways of the Lord, the righteous judge who brings cloaked things to light. Turning to supplication, they prayed that the sinful deed might be fully blotted out. The noble Judah warned the soldiers to keep themselves free from sin, for they had seen with their own eyes what had happened because of the sin of those who had fallen. He also took up a collection among his soldiers, amounting to 2,000 silver drachmas, which he sent to Jerusalem to provide for a sin offering. In doing this, he acted in a very excellent and noble way, inasmuch as he had the resurrection of the dead in view. For if he were not expecting the fallen to rise again, it would have been useless and frivolous to pray for the dead. Regardless if he did this with a view to the splendid reward which awaits those who had gone to rest in godliness, it was a sacred and pious thought. This was how he made atonement for the dead, that they might be ransomed from this sin.